For those of you who are visiting or don't know, I returned last week from participating in a travel and study seminar to the Philippines. It was sponsored by the Presbyterian Peacemaking Program of our denomination. We spent 10 days in various locations of the Philippines, and we focused on issues connected to human trafficking and poverty and the environment. And we met lots of brothers and sisters there, and I tacked on an extra week in Indonesia, kind of on my own, as that is where my family is from, part of my family, and so I wanted to see there, so I was gone for about 3 weeks, and now I'm back. And for a portion of our visit, now it's whenever somebody asks me, well, how was your trip? Well, there's just no way I can describe it in two or three sentences. It was full, is what I have come to say to folks, because it was so full, I can't share it with you all this morning, but maybe just a taste, and I'm sure it will come out in the weeks to come, more and more of it. Maybe we'll have another chance to have a more in-depth discovery of it. For a portion of the visit, though, we traveled on a road that went up from the hills of Dumaguete. I'm sorry, you can't, maybe you can hit the lights, or did I? There. You can hopefully see them better. You can ask me to look at them better later. That's the road that leads up from Dumaguete on the island of Negros in the southern half of the country. And we started going into the country toward those mountains that you see in the background. That's the road we traveled. You see there in the distance some mats where they were drying rice from the fields. And then we headed up into the mountains. That's the road up there, spectacular views and people living along the side of the road that they were trying to, that the road that they were improving there. Some houses they lived in. These are houses of sugarcane workers. For we went to the town called Mabine, and there much of the population is dependent not upon rice, but upon sugar. They go into the fields and they burn the field first to get rid of all the extra leaves and stuff, and then they send crews out into the field, manual laborers, to cut the sugar cane and put it on trucks. And so they labor with machetes in the fields all day for a few bucks. We actually went out to the fields as they were working. We cut some sugarcane ourselves to experience what it was like. And then we visited with families, sugarcane worker families. In the back, you see the pastor and his wife of the church we visited. And that is one part of the people that we visited with one afternoon, three of us. Testing one, two? Okay. And there you see the simple meal that we shared. What their regular diet is, they, well, first of all, this is the matriarch of the family. She's blind, and she spends most of her time in that house there, and completely dependent upon those, everyone to bring her food and care for her. There she is with her granddaughter. This is us in the meal that we shared. It was simple bananas and sweet potatoes cooked in a pot. As every good family, it's cooked by this man. As we talked to the women and her children, the man was in the back cooking for us. There you can't, maybe you can see there, the pot there with the bananas and the sweet potatoes in it. He just cooked it on an open fire. And that was our feast. And they, because we gave them some extra funds to fund this meal, they were able to afford some Pepsi to give to us, and some crackers and sweets that were, you know, wrapped in packages. This is a couple of the children that we met, who had a great, we had a great time with them there. And this is part of the family there that we met. And the woman was the one of our main conversation partners. The girl to her right is one of the two girls that we met of the 8 or 10 children that were there. One of the two girls that actually went to school. And we had three of our group there visiting with this family, and we asked her. One of them was a former school principal, so she was very concerned about why these kids weren't in school. And sometimes they keep their children home to work in the fields or to help around the house. Why are your children home from school? Why did they stay home today? And the woman said, well, I kept them home today because I told them they might hear a message from God. And of course, of the three of us who were in the group, I was the only clergy person, and they all went like this. Looking straight at me. I asked them, do they have any questions of us about our culture, about America? And she said, well, is everybody rich? And as I stood there with banana and sweet potato in hand, what could I say? Are you rich? She asked. Three of us. How do you answer that? We talked about the message from God. Them looking right at me. Well, Pastor, what is your message of God? Preachers are supposed to have messages from God, right? And I said, stuffing my mouth with another banana. I'm sorry, my mouth is full. I can't talk right now. Indeed, what I didn't have the heart, what I was afraid to tell her in that moment. Me living a life of relative abundance and comfort, and they living a life of daily struggle just to eat. In that moment, I had nothing to say. I'm a preacher, and you look to me, truth be told, I am a seeker of God's messages, perhaps you are too. Messages from God. In so many moments of life, as a husband and father, as an American, as Christian, as a pastor, I too am keen to listen for messages from God, especially when faced with the challenges of life. That's what Lent is about. We are journeying to the cross. We are focusing our spiritual attention on Jesus' sacrifice and on our own spiritual journeys. Lent is about trying to strip away all of the distractions and all of the extraneous parts of our lives so that we can focus in on hearing a message from God, on hearing a message of the cross. And in this journey, I am no different than a mother and her children living in the middle of a sugarcane field, eating bananas and sweet potatoes. Perhaps that unites us all. Perhaps we could all use a moment when we come to our senses. Perhaps we could all use a message of God. I don't know, can you? Lord, ready. There are no voices from heaven this morning, but we do have this Bible. It's on my iPad. Talk about first world, right? We do have messages, our faith tells us, in Scripture. And this morning we have this story, one of the most well-known and beloved stories of the Bible. And deservedly so, it offers us the core, the center of the gospel. The story of the prodigal son, it's traditionally called. And it's a powerful story precisely because we see ourselves in it. We see ourselves in the younger son who shatters the bonds a family and community to feed his own individual desire. We see ourselves in the younger son when we go our own ways and end up finding ourselves in the mud with nothing. Our mud may take different forms, but it's not hard to see us in his place. In the Philippines, it hit me how we in the West have taken our own inheritance, like the younger son, and are squandering it away with extravagant living. And though some of us in the world are able to live it up, most in the world are stuck in the mud, wondering how nice it is at the Father's house. Are you rich? Time will tell if we come to our senses. And I think the parable challenges us to see the older son when we look in the mirror too, the older son. If the younger brother, with his extravagant living, let life slip from his hands too easily, the older brother held on to life too tightly, held on too tightly to responsibility and obligation, to his own goodness and his own pride, his own ideologies and his religious doctrines and practices. He held it all too tightly. I don't know, are we the older brother too? The story is powerful because we see ourselves in it. But as we head deeper into this season of Lent, perhaps we can discover that this story is less about the younger and older brother and less about us than it is about the God who comes running to us with utter abandon and disregard for his own self-image. At its heart, the parable turns not around the older and younger son, and it turns not around us. It's about God. Did you see the father, without a comment, let his son go, take his share of the inheritance to a faraway country, without comment? In the ancient world, this was a scandal. It was disgraceful. And yet the father let him go. Can you picture the father as he sees his son come around the corner down at the end of the street? Can you see his joy on his face? And he comes running. Not like a dignified father ought to act in the ancient world. Ancient, if you're on top, you don't run. They run to you. You don't run to them. And yet there is the father running because the father cannot wait to embrace his child who was lost and is now being found. God doesn't care about what God looks like. He's even willing to act disgracefully by our standards to show us the kind of grace that only God can show. No cost is too great to pay, not even the life of his own son. Just to be together with us. Perhaps our message is just the invitation to encounter this God once more, to step out, to maybe just peek out from around the corner, way down the street, just to look to see if God is standing in the front door, waiting for us. Just to let him glimpse our face so that God can come running to us. Perhaps our message this morning is to open ourselves to this encounter afresh. And there's one more thing about this story that I noticed this week, and it's born out of my experience in the Philippines. And that is that what happens when the son returns home? What do they do? I know you can speak up. It's okay. What do? They what? He hugs him, and then what? They have a party. Do you notice that they have a party? We love to come to church and look like this. We don't want to smile and open ourselves to a fresh experience of God's grace. Brothers and sisters, we come to be in the presence of a living God who renews and forgives and sends us out with purpose and with strength. This moment, this hour, it's time to party. to celebrate the goodness of God's love, why do we make it so serious? Why so serious? I had to say that. Batman fans. Serious is necessary. Confession is necessary. Honesty with God and ourselves is necessary. As we look at the real problems in our world, the differences, the inequality, the injustice. But then God gathers us together and we have a party. Because no matter who we are, no matter where we've gone, no matter what we've done, no matter how far away we've been, as soon as we give God the opportunity, God comes running to embrace you. And the funny thing about the party is that it empowers us. It empowers us to do some running ourselves. So that when we leave this place, it's not just remembering a great party, it's to welcome others to next Sunday's feast. And soon they will ask, "Are you rich?" And our response will be, "Let me share my riches with you."